As a listener of this podcast, you know the devastating impact of narcissistic abuse, how it shatters your confidence, leaving you struggling in future relationships. But it doesn't need to be that way. Join me and experts Lisa Sunny and Rosanna Fay at the Strong and Unstoppable Retreat this October in beautiful Orlando, Florida. During this transformative four-day experience, you'll uncover the unconscious psychological blocks holding your recovery back. Through equine therapy, targeted workshops, and practical skill development, you'll uncover and overcome unconscious obstacles and reconnect with your inner strength. This retreat is specifically designed for women who are committed to their healing and ready to break free from the lingering effects of narcissistic abuse. Space is limited and spots are filling up, so don't miss this opportunity to invest in yourself and your future. Secure your spot by visiting wellnessrecoveryretreats.com. That's wellnessrecoveryretreats. Take your first step towards becoming strong and unstoppable today. I was a snooper in that toxic relationship. In fact, it became a regular habit of mine to search through my husband's phone for evidence that he was cheating. Today, Lisa Sunny joins me to explore why snooping happens. And the self-help tip is some questions to ask yourself if you're feeling the drive to do this as well. This is Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse, and I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience. Each week, we're going to take a deep dive into the dynamics of narcissistic abuse. As a listener-supported podcast, thank you for considering becoming a subscriber for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Lisa, do you think it's ever okay to snoop?
I do, and it's a controversial opinion. Fight me.
All right. So tell me why. Why do I do think that's okay to do?
I know I feel like I'm, you know, saying yes and no at the same time. I don't ever think it's okay. What I'm saying is I really understand that it happens and that there are very complicated, layered reasons for why it happens. I think that it's very easy to say, if you feel the need to snoop, then you know your relationship's already over or that you should leave. If you don't trust the person, you shouldn't be in a relationship with them. I think everyone can get that. But I want people to sort of imagine the scenarios that any of us could genuinely be in, because you'd asked me that question a decade ago, I would have said to you, no, that's absolutely disgusting to go through someone's things. However, when you feel trapped and desperate and you're being gaslit and you're being told that you're crazy to think that there's something to find in the other person's phone, and then you go through it because there's just, you have this feeling or you've seen shreds of evidence and you are just absolutely desperate for the truth. You almost are seeking it to prove yourself wrong. And you may not prove yourself wrong. You may prove yourself right. But I relate to the desperation. I've been through this. And I am a person who would have always said, no, there's no circumstance where it's okay and that you should leave. And I never would have said it in a, like, you should just leave as if it's easy. But I would have told people, you know, you need to leave. What about when you're in a trauma bond? What about when you're married and have children and your financial ties are too complicated to get out of, or family obligations, cultural reasons? There are, you know, fear. What if they threaten to harm you? There are so many reasons that drive a person to invade the other person's privacy. It's really complicated to understand, but for those of us that have been through it, you get it.
I remember clearly. It was during that period of time, he was over a lot. We were about to get married, or maybe we had just gotten married, but in that phase of moving between living apart and being married. And I had given him my old iPhone watch. I'd given him an old Apple watch, and he had left it sitting. He didn't take it to work. He'd let it sitting on the stand charging. And I remember seeing it flash. It keep flashing when it get a text come in. Mm-hmm. And I knew that these are texts because I had one, and that's how mine behaved. So I knew what it was that I was seeing. And I remember thinking to myself, I wonder who's texting him. That's really odd. He's getting a lot of activity during work hours, and people should know he's at work. Why is this happening? And I thought to myself, no, you're not going to go over and look. You didn't do that in your last marriage. That wasn't a piece of this. Now, granted, my marriage to Brad was such that Brad would just hand his phone and just say, hey, go look this up for me, or figure out where we're going on the map. I mean, it was, he hated his phone, honestly. Brad had a love-hate relationship with the thing. And there was nothing about Brad's life that was private. And it was just, he just wasn't that kind of a person. So I bet you he never even had a passcode. It just wasn't necessary. So to not trust him, I trusted the guy completely. I never had a worry. So I said to myself, as I'm seeing this Apple Watch flash with text, you're not going to be one of these women who is going through this. You're not going to go over and check, leave it be, because that's a sign that you don't trust him and you trust him. And now I think about that, Lisa, and it drives me nuts. If I had done that, mm-hmm. I would have found out then that he was cheating. And I would have known before we sold the house, before I'd sold the car, before I'd gotten the visa to another country, and I could have halted it in its tracks. But here's the thing I think people don't understand, and I agree. I actually do say, hey, with hindsight, looking at the whole scenario, and my conclusion was, I wish I'd trusted my gut better, that I didn't need that evidence in order for me to know this relationship was a failure, that that how bad it made me feel was enough to know that it was a failure. But what people don't, I think, don't understand was the craziness that is created due to gaslighting, that you really begin to doubt what reality is. You no longer trust yourself, that you chose this person. You thought you chose the best person. I remember clearly sitting on the couch, looking at my therapist square in the face, saying I had never met a safer person. And I couldn't have met a more dangerous person.
Yeah.
So here, that's the first gaslighting. We don't even talk about that, that they create a scenario. And how many times have you and I heard victims say that? I thought this was the safest woman. I thought this was the safest man. I thought they would never do these things to me. I thought they understood how broken and wounded I was, and they loved me more. So that they gaslight you to believe that through the love bombing, that that's who they are. So that we then distrust ourselves, our own, you know, here I'm, my gut instinct was screaming so loud that I hired a PI while we dated to a background check. Why would I not think that was problematic? And then I'm about ready to marry a guy, or I just married him, and I'm wanting to look at the Apple Watch. Why would I not think that's problematic? But to me, getting the proof and seeing it was like it cemented. There's really another reality that you're not aware of. This person is doing really despicable things behind your back.
But that need to look, it's so easily sort of rationalized as like, you know, oh, it's my own insecurities and I'm sure I have nothing to worry about, but it's because they've built this trust. I have a really interesting part to why I trusted mine. He would say to me all the time that cheating was the worst thing anyone could ever do, and that his father cheated on his mother constantly, and that it was disgusting. That when you are with someone and you say that you're together and you are in a committed relationship, to be with other people is the absolute worst thing you could ever do. And it wasn't gendered. It was both parties equal. And yet he is a cheater. He is exactly like his father. And I find that really interesting because it built this up for me of, you shared something with me that was vulnerable about your family. You condemned the behavior openly, consistently for years, and then did the same thing yourself. I never went through his phone ever the entire time we were together. Always had his password.
Really?
He always
you
had
didn't.
Mine. Not once, ever.
Wow.
But I will tell you the story of when I did. But not once when we were together did I do that, because I didn't need to. I trusted him. And in hindsight, like, I could just hang my head in shame, right? Because we didn't know then what we know now. And so, you know, I should lift my head and just tell my story without all the shame. But I trusted him so implicitly that he would, you know, get off work at midnight. He worked later, and go out with his friends and come home at 7, 8, 9 a.m. the next day. And his phone had died, and there was some reason he didn't text me. And I knew that he was not cheating on me. He absolutely was, by the way. But at the time, I knew that he wasn't. I know where, like, not exactly where he was, but I knew the kind of certain people that he was with. And I know that's kind of the lifestyle. I had it all in my mind. It all made sense. Even though I didn't like the behavior and it made me angry, he wasn't cheating. So even despite assault, abuse, gaslighting, financial abuse, all the stuff I've been through, he wasn't cheating. And even in my early days as a content creator, in talking about my own story, I would say, no, they don't all cheat. Mine didn't cheat, until his mistress said it out loud on the internet herself. And I was like, oh. Now, I will still say they don't all cheat. But
right.
I trusted
him. I agree.
Him.
They don't all cheat. But
yeah. I mean, I was wrong for me, but I'm, you know, we're not wrong in general. But after we had decided to live apart and he had made this deal with me, we're going to live apart. I'm going to work on myself. You're going to work on yourself. We are not seeing other people. We are together, but we are living
and
apart.
And he was specific about that.
He was specific. Yeah. We both are not dating other people. We both are working on ourselves. We are together, but we are living apart. And I was happy to be living apart at that point. He immediately went on dating apps. And I felt something. I know him. I know that he needs the attention. And so he would lie. He would disappear. And I sort of lost a handle on everything because he had moved out. So I didn't even know, like, you know, there was no not coming home. He didn't any night, but that was the agreement. And I remember I just felt something. And all I can describe it as is just woman's intuition. I don't know, but I felt something. And he had stopped by one night and to see the kids, but he left his phone in the living room and it was just sitting there. And I remember looking at it thinking, I've never gone through his phone. I'm not going to do that right now. As I pick up his phone, unlock it, go through it. And what I found was 6 or 7 text messages or text message threads from multiple people, one woman in particular. And he was that one person he was talking about wanting to snuggle, which is like not an overt admission of sex or specifically cheating. And it was talking about wanting to, not about having done it, but obviously completely inappropriate. Plus other messages to just women in general that seemed kind of inappropriate. But again, nothing that was like nail in the coffin. But I felt something was off. So I didn't say a word. And I waited. And the next time I saw him, I did it again. And I saw more text messages. And that was when I found everything. It was the second time. So I'm glad that I followed my intuition, even though, yeah, objectively speaking, I invaded his privacy. And abusers will sometimes invade your privacy and be like, but I just needed to check. So it's, you know, a double-edged sword. But I felt desperate. So in defense of me, in defense of the people who feel that need, it's so easy to say that you would leave and that you would never do that and that it's an immediate sign to go. But I was looking to prove myself wrong. I went in there thinking, I'm not going to find anything. It's going to be fine. And I'll just calm down. And it was the complete opposite. Right. So honestly, like, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad. I'd still be being lied to.
Yeah, here's the problem for me is that I found the evidence, but it was never enough. So I would go looking and I would invariably find something, you know, terrible, really horrible. And then I would confront him about it. I'd say, I looked in your phone. There's a part of me that wish I'd played that game smarter, that I had not said anything and just saw what would happen and where would it go, you know. Maybe what else would I have learned? I feel like I was so honest that I kept giving up my hand way too quick. You know, if this was poker, I was showing my hand. And then he would tell me that, yeah, he'd blown it or he'd known better or he had some excuse or we'd take it into therapy. We'd address it in therapy. And then I would think, oh, we're working on this. See, this is going to get better because I've addressed it and he's addressing it and we've had a conversation about it. And now it's going to go into a better place. Even though when I go back and I know I have some of these conversations that I actually detailed and love you more, you can see that he didn't really take ownership. There was no, like, you know, I often call it the dark night of the soul. There was no huge crisis. It wasn't like, it was like, oh my goodness, I love you. And so, you know, I never got any of that. But I wanted the relationship to work so badly that it wouldn't be enough. And even though, you know, even as a person who has a faith background and that was my out, I had enough now to be able to divorce him. I didn't want to divorce him. So it was never enough. That's the part that I found that I do see this. And I wonder if you see this too, is that for some of us, maybe for you, and I'd be curious to know, was that enough then to get you out to like, I am done with this person? Or did you find it became another addiction? For me, it became an addiction. I started to get hooked to looking. And couldn't look enough, couldn't search enough. I'd spend hours going through backlogs of stuff because I felt like there was too much that didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, this person lived it. I hear yours did too, but he lived a second double life. I one time asked him near the end of the relationship. I know I've shared this story before, but I asked him, so this is what I thought life looked like. You did this, you went here, you said this, you did this, you were at this job or whatever. Is that anywhere close to what actually happened? He goes, not at all. It wasn't like that at all. And that was the closest I ever got him to say, your reality was not the same. I projected that reality. That was not the reality of what was true. Yeah.
Mine would lie to this day. So if I asked mine that, which I would never, but if I did today, he would lie and say, no, that's exactly, you've made it up. I never cheated. I never, nothing. I find it interesting, even the debate of like whether or not it was cheating because we were living apart. We know that we were together. Mm-hmm. We know the agreement we made, but I know he positions it as we were apart. So who cares? But no.
And by the way, if you, and Lisa, if you'd seen anybody else in that period of time, you know, you would have been cheating.
Well, that's a whole separate funny story, probably a whole other episode.
Yeah, exactly.
But I had an affair with the handyman, actually. So I'll never forget that.
Amazing
story.
How those rules don't apply equally to both of us.
Yeah. I actually, to me, the funniest part about the affair with the handyman was, I can't even say it without laughing, is that it was after he was with the person he's with now. So
yeah,
I don't understand. If she wasn't his mistress, then how was I cheating if he was with her? Like the timeline, I'm confused.
I know.
The math doesn't match.
It will never make sense.
It'll never make sense. But that's okay, because you don't try to make sense out of the logic of a narcissist.
Right.
But I wish that I had found those messages and immediately felt like, listen, we're living apart. It's already falling apart. You're clearly seeing someone else. It's over. Did I say that? Sure. Did it work? No, because that immediately turned into, oh, stop it. She's just a friend. She has a boyfriend. Turns out that boyfriend was married. And then later, she sort of left him and went with my partner. But this idea that, like, don't worry, she's safe. It's fine. You could even meet her. It's not a big deal. And I still want you, and I want this, and I love you. And that was all garbage. It was absolute garbage. I was so compelled to, you talk about obsessiveness. There was a day where I've spoken to her. Like I wanted to like prove to myself that it wasn't in my head and that he was telling the truth, that I wanted that proof. I wanted to believe him so badly that I was seeking the evidence to prove him right. And honestly, just burying my head in the sand. It was so obvious that he was lying at this point. But back then, I wanted to believe it so badly that I was willing to continue and listen to this garbage that they were just friends. But it still made me snoop because I always had that doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I saw him, it was an opportunity to like check. And every time I checked, he was still talking to her. So even when I would say, you have to stop, otherwise we can't continue. And he would say, I get it. I understand. You're right. I totally understand. And then he would continue to talk to her. And I know for her, that felt like he's choosing me, not really realizing that the kind of person that drives you to this level of insecurity is who they are. And you're next, as they always are. But I became obsessed with like proving it. And there was just a certain day and a certain conversation that just led me to say, I can't do this anymore. I didn't shut my feelings off, but I shut my actions off, if that makes sense. That was the last day that I felt emotionally invested. And I decided in that moment, and it was December 18th. I remember the day.
Wow.
I'm done. And I just stopped the behaviors of trying to reengage in the relationship. It was done immediately.
Right. That's interesting you share that, because that actually is what happened for me too. I'd never put that together until you just said that. In fact, it got so bad. My snooping was such a persistent part, and I was doing it so much of the time. He would then say, whenever I would find something and accuse him of it, he'd say, I don't know. You know more about what I do than I do. You know more about technology than I do, Carrie. You know, so he would just like brush that off. Like I found him like sending emojis to other like these like pictures and gifts and stuff to other women, and because they'd say, "I miss you" and "I love you." Well, I'm not getting them, so somebody's getting them. Why is he searching for them? Why are in their Google history? And you know, you're like, well, I don't. And I discovered he had learned some workarounds. He was better at being sneaky than I was. I hadn't gone to the level where I'd cloned his phone. Now, the me today, I'd be tempted to do that, frankly. I probably would clone a person's phone and keystroke logger. I would probably then get everything that they... And I have gone through his phones multiple times now that the relationship's over, especially as I was writing the book. I really combed them very, very closely and saw what else I could find that I might have missed. But just like you, there was a moment that I snooped. And I actually sort of see it as a kind of a divine moment because he set the situation up. He made himself vulnerable. Normally he didn't. I mean, he was even considering like putting on a privacy screen on his phone so I couldn't even see what he was doing on his phone. Oh yeah, this guy really wanted to not have me in his life like that. So it was when Cameron was sick and had just come home from the hospital after his first chemo round. And so everybody's on tender hooks because he was near death and it was very scary. And we now knew at that point, we had learned that every symptom that Cameron had was serious. So if he had a headache, it might have meant something. If he had a fever, that was catastrophic. Everything took on a whole new picture. So the first night home, and interestingly enough, it was my birthday. So, and it was the day after our anniversary. So we'd now been married 2 years and I was supposedly celebrating my birthday. Obviously, who's celebrating my birthday? We're not. I'm just happy my son's home from the hospital. He says, as we're celebrating with pizza, that he has a headache. And I'm scared. Like, do we need to rush back to the hospital? He just did his first chemo round. What does this mean? So I said, I'll sleep by him tonight out on the sofa. Why'd you sleep here? I'll keep an eye on you. And my ex, which to me showed that he knows nothing about parenting, although he claimed to be a great parent, he's going to go to bed, but he'll set the phone to wake up at 2 a.m. Now, what mom is going to sleep with a son who's near death fighting leukemia? I'm not sleeping. I'm going to stay awake.
No sleep. Yeah.
So I am not sleeping. And I said to my ex, sure, fine. If you want to do that, that's fine. Go ahead. And then he goes off to the bedroom and disappears, goes to sleep. So as it gets near 2 o'clock, I start to remember that alarm's going to go off and I don't want to wake the whole house up. My son's sleeping. I'm worried about that. So I go in to get the phone and it's near his bed. He fell asleep texting. He fell asleep holding it. And he knows that it's on. Yeah. And so he happened to turn the passcode off, I guess. And I got on, or I knew the passcode or something. I get on and it flips right into the text messaging because that's the last thing he had done. And there was the text that, see, he had found a workaround. So I couldn't see his text messaging. There it was. He was texting her and they were talking about my son's health and they were talking about my money.
Ooh.
And that was the final piece. Everything came to not only that he was cheating, but they were scheming how they're going to meet up while he stayed in near me, near the hospital, and how they're going to get together, hook up together. And they're also worried about how much the medical care of my son was going to affect his half of my money. And when I saw that, it was like, just like you described, something broke. Mm-hmm. I thought, this person's not just betrayed my heart. He's betraying me financially. He's betrayed the company. He has no allegiance to me or to mine or anything at all. We're done. This is a betrayal of betrayal of betrayals. We are done. Mm-hmm. And I was scared. I was shaking, but I left the phone out on the counter so he could see I saw it. And then I looked at him when he picked it up and I said, I know. And that was the beginning of the end. So you're right. I'd always, my previous story when I talked about snooping was I was a addicted snooper. It never led to anything helpful. It was just something like a train I couldn't get off that I kept doing over and over. But you're right. Actually, I found something that for me, like you, finished it. I just this is too low and I'm done with you.
Yeah. At some point, I feel like it verified reality, you know, and I think that's what I was seeking the whole time. And then denying reality, because hello, we do that. But I needed to find a way to stay. And it ended up being the reason I left. And so that's why I don't have regrets. Because, you know, the other sort of flip side, I've made videos on this topic before. I made this one video in particular that sort of sticks with me about a victim of abuse going through her abuser's phone. That is the context of the video. And so many people just are like, to the abuse, just gloss right over it. And all they do is attack the victim for going through the phone. But on the flip side, the majority of the comments were, if there's nothing to hide, what's the problem? It's normal to have your partner's password. Now, in my current relationship, he had my password, I have his. We've never gone through each other's phones because you could if you wanted to. He wouldn't have to like wait till I'm asleep. He could just take my phone. And to your point earlier, like, hey, can you look this up? There's nothing to hide. So the honesty and the transparency is there. And I think hiding in plain sight was an issue in my relationship because he knew I could and that I wouldn't. He knew that I trusted him. So he could just get away with it because I just was in La La Land. But I will just say this really interesting point. The new supply was very critical of me for going through his phone. And he delivered that message to me, right? That she felt that it was so pathetic that I had gone through his phone. And that if you're going to go through someone's phone, you already know the relationship's over. She's pathetic. So a year later, when she felt insecure with their relationship and she went through his phone, which is apparently pathetic, she discovered that he had lied to her and had been out with some girl for 14 hours and had never heard of her, didn't know who he was with. And he was really like, why do you care? What's the problem? No big deal. And he did it on a holiday that you would normally spend with your family. And I just find it interesting that the very people who potentially are the ones that are like, I would never, and you know you need to leave, it could be you one day. So I urge people to be understanding of the really complicated circumstances that can drive that desperation where you know that if you ask them, they're going to lie to you. But it's not actually, you know what I just realized as I'm talking? It's not that you fear they're going to lie to you. You fear that they're going to gaslight you, because lie is just denial. Gaslight is like, how dare you go through that? How dare you go through my phone? And suddenly they're the victim of your snooping. And we're not talking about the fact that, but I just found evidence of cheating. Now, the breach of privacy is the primary issue. So they're using Darvo and they flip the script on you. But it's not because you feel like, is it true or is it a lie? It's because they're completely distorting your reality to think that you're a lunatic to ever think they would ever cheat on you when they're absolutely doing something sneaky. So you need the evidence. You can't rely on them telling you, and you can't rely on your own gut. That's the problem.
I'd love to talk more about that in the podcast, Estra, why our gut gets in trouble, why we no longer trust it. I think a good self-help tip to follow up this to kind of wrap up today is something that we talked about, is that I don't think this behavior is right or wrong. And I'm not going to weigh in on somebody should or should not do it. I mean, I'd be casting stones at myself. And if I was in a situation where I doubted myself like that again, I probably would do it again, just because that's who I am. But I do think next time I'll ask more critical questions, like what's making me feel unsafe? What will I do if I do find something? What will I do if I don't find something? To start to ask myself, where is this going to take me? Because what is it what I'm really trying to determine here? What's the hang up that I'm having that I can't determine what's real or not real? I think that that's what I'll do more the next time, to give myself better context, because I didn't really have a game plan. I truly didn't. And I could never find an answer except at the end when I realized how deep the betrayal went. I didn't know what I was going to do. I got so bad, Lisa, I know we didn't get into this, but I actually followed him across town. I stalked him. So it wasn't just limited to the phone. It was other things that I was doing as well. But so that's what I would recommend. If someone's feeling the temptation to do this, follow up with some very big questions about what's your motivation and what you hope to get out of it, and what will you do with the information? Yeah. But let's take this over to the podcast, Extra. I know we have a whole lot more to say about this. And thank you so much for talking to me about it today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Are you following me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Find me at Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And whether you're in, consider leaving, or have left a narcissistic relationship, find community support at my Toxic Free Relationship Club. You can learn about this resource as well as others at CarrieMcAvoyPhD.com. And I'll see you back here next week.